let's start with the idea that this is a convicted felon. I mean, think about that, who is threatening to jail me.
He's actually threatening to jail all of us, Governor. Good luck.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Nutty.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, not yet in jail, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. Hello, Desi Doyen.
Hey, not from jail. Hi.
Yes, not yet. we will be getting to your Green News report that we had to kick down the road yesterday as we ran along. That'll be coming up a little bit later. But other than that, hey, welcome to the program. Donald Trump is a loser, which, of course, is why he tries so hard to act like he is a winner. He is losing in the polls. Few like him at all or his policies. He even lost the national popular vote last year, which few in the media seem to have noticed or remembered. More Americans, in fact, voted against Donald Trump last year than for him, and there were more Americans who liked him last year than like him this year. He's losing in the courts, at least the lower courts, the ones that actually follow the rule of law, unlike the corrupted Supreme Court, as we discussed on yesterday's show with the great Lisa Graves. He's losing so far on the shutdown, it seems, which I'll get us caught up on in a bit. But suffice to say, the White House and congressional Republicans are in disarray, as Democrats, surprisingly, seem to be staying united with the American people, supporting them and their fight to save access to health care for tens of millions of Americans who will otherwise see their health care costs more than double beginning on January 1. That is not long from now. And Donald Trump is losing in his attempt to start a war, an actual war between the federal government, trying to use real U.S. troops, and cities and states that he hates because a majority of their residents voted against him last year. We'll touch on a bit of all of that today, but we will start with Chancellor Trump's so far failed effort to spark an actual shooting war against American citizens with his deployments or his attempted deployments of U.S. troops in U.S. cities under the phony premise that cities like Portland and Chicago are being burnt to the ground by left-wing terrorists or whatever Antifa nonsense they are poisoning his brain with over at Fox News or even inside the White House itself, where he is being lied to, seemingly, about all of this by pathetic little lying warmonger crybabies like Stephen Goebbels Miller. So, as petulant little children do when they are losing, they act out. Even if, I should say, that comparison is not necessarily fair to little children, my apologies. President Trump said in a post on his failing social media site on Wednesday that Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, quote, should be in jail. In a desperate attempt to escalate his conflict with the two Democratic officials challenging his use of the U.S. military against U.S. citizens in major U.S. cities that did not vote for him. Quote, Chicago mayor should be in jail for failing to protect ICE officers, Trump said in a post, adding Governor Pritzker also. ICE officers, of course, should be able to protect themselves, frankly, given that ICE now has more money than the entire militaries of most nations around the world. And frankly, ICE officers are not really under attack unless you consider peaceful protest to be an attack, which clearly the Trump administration does. The president's pathetic, whiny, crybaby post comes a day after Texas National Guard troops arrived in Illinois, despite local and state officials' opposition. Trump has threatened for weeks to send troops to Chicago as part of a crime-fighting and immigration effort, supposedly, and Democrats have slammed the push as overreach and as a political stunt. Reach for comment, White House spokesperson Abigail Jackson said that, quote, J.B. Pritzker and Brandon Johnson have blood on their hands. Speaking of overreach and political stunts, her statement did not address NBC News's question about what crimes the president believes that Mayor Johnson and Governor Pritzker actually committed, and whether the White House planned to try to have federal agents arrest them for something. Who knows? Pritzker responded to the president in a post, a social media post, saying Trump is now calling for the arrest of elected representatives, checking his power. What else is left on the path to full-blown authoritarianism? Good question, Governor. Reached for comment, Mayor Johnson said that, quote, this is not the first time that Trump has tried to have a black man unjustly arrested. I'm not going anywhere, he added. On Monday, Illinois sued in an attempt to prevent the White House from deploying federal troops in Chicago. A judge scheduled a hearing on that case for Thursday, that just days after Trump appointed federal judge in Oregon flatly rejected in no uncertain terms Trump's attempts to deploy federal troops to Portland after making clear that there was after the judge made clear that there was no insurrection in Portland, that the city was not under siege by Antifa or anyone else, that it was not, quote, war ravaged or, quote, burning to the ground, as Trump continues to falsely claim because he can't tell the difference between Fox News on television and reality, or he just doesn't want to. The only war ongoing in either Portland or Chicago is Trump's use of federal agents to do things like smash down doors and windows in an entire apartment building, with federal agents from ICE and Customs and Border Protection rappelling from helicopters onto the building and arresting everyone inside of it without a warrant in the middle of the night, detaining migrants and U.S. citizens alike, women, children, the elderly, some of them unclothed and all of them terrified. In a pathetic little show of force by the very same federal troops that Trump is complaining need help protecting themselves by local Chicago officials.
Sounds more like these terrorized residents need protection from ICE.
Correct. Quote, we will not tolerate ICE agents violating our residents' constitutional rights, nor will we allow the federal government to disregard our local authority, said Mayor Johnson in a press release marking his newly enacted so-called ICE-free zone executive order. After Trump compared Chicago to a, quote, war zone, Governor Pritzker said in an interview on CNN, quote, they're just making this up. Then what do? They fire tear gas and smoke grenades, and they make it look like it's a war zone. In recent days, Pritzker has also said that he believed that Trump was sick, was unwell, and in fact should be removed from office as per the Constitution's 25th Amendment.
Sending troops into cities, thinking that that's some sort of proving ground for war, or that indeed there's some sort of internal war going on in the United States, is just, frankly, inane. And I'm concerned for his health. There is something genuinely wrong with this man, and the 25th Amendment ought to be invoked.
There is something generally wrong with that man. That was last week from Governor Pritzker. Today, he was asked directly about Trump calling for his arrest.
Well, let's start with the idea that this is a convicted felon. I mean, think about that, who is threatening to jail me. I got to say, this guy's unhinged. He's insecure. He's a wannabe dictator. And there's one thing I really want to say to Donald Trump. If you come for my people, you come through me. So come and get me.
There's one thing that I really want to say to Donald Trump, too, but I'm not allowed to do so on FCC radio,
no,
I think.
No, you are not.
Okay, I won't. Trump's lead protector in the U.S. House, the one right now protecting him from, for now, from the release of the Epstein files, in which Trump is repeatedly named in the investigation of the convicted child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Mike Johnson was asked whether he thought Mayor Johnson and Governor Pritzker, the Democratic leaders in Illinois, should be arrested. And this pretend champion of freedom and the rule of law and the Constitution, Mike Johnson, could not even come up with an, of course not, they broke no laws. Here's what he said instead.
Should they be in prison? should the mayor of Chicago and the governor of Illinois be in prison? I'm not the attorney general. I'm the Speaker of the House, and I'm trying to manage the chaos here. I'm not following the day-to-day on that.
Very courageous, Mike. Very brave. As to the supposed, quote, chaos there in the U.S. House, what chaos? Mike Johnson sent the entire U.S. House home last week with instructions that they were not to come back until the Senate passed a bill to reopen the federal government. Democrats in the House, nonetheless, have stuck around anyway in D.C., even if most Republicans are now back at home hiding from their own constituents in their own districts. While cowardly House Speaker Mike Johnson cannot seem to come up with an ounce of courage or self-respect to defend the rule of law and the Constitution of his own country, former Republican governors, at least a couple of them, are doing so and raising at least some concerns about Trump's strong-arm tactics, the several constitutional crises that he is forcing on this nation, and more. Quote, "This is infuriating," said New Jersey's former Republican Governor Christine Todd Whitman in an interview with NBC, adding, quote, "It is stoking resentment and fanning the flames." Former Ohio Governor John Kasich, Ohio governor and one-time presidential candidate, said, quote, "I would say work with me. Don't just shove stuff down my throat," referring to the Trump administration's threats and everything else and sending troops into cities. Sitting GOP governors, however, NBC notes, were less eager, as they describe it, to weigh in on the matter. Less eager. Roughly a dozen current GOP governors, those Republicans who formerly claimed to be champions of freedom and small government and states' rights, they have either declined or have not yet responded to requests for comment from NBC. Don't hold your breath, kids. A Trump ally, on the other hand, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, he is on record embracing the administration's efforts to send U.S. troops into U.S. cities, writing Sunday on X that he had, quote, "fully authorized Trump to deploy 400 Texas National Guard members to other states." Now, remember, this is the same guy, Governor Greg Abbott, who pretended to be outraged last year during the Biden administration back in 2024 when the U.S. Department of the Air Force proposed legislation that would have allowed the Secretary of the Air Force to transfer Air National Guard units to the Space Force without a governor's consent. Abbott called that a, quote, "power grab." He warned that it would set a dangerous precedent by sidelining governors as commanders-in-chief of their state guards. And yet, he's allowing the federalization of Texas troops and the deployment of those troops to Illinois and Oregon, where the governors of both states have said they do not need or want federal troops in their states or in their cities. Abbott also accused President Biden last year of violating the Constitution and undermining Texas's sovereignty. Regarding immigration enforcement, Abbott claimed that Texas had the constitutional authority to defend itself and invoked that authority to justify Abbott's actions at the border. Apparently, Oregon and Illinois And their governors, well, they do not get to enjoy that same constitutional authority because I guess Texas is, what do they say?
A whole nother country.
Yeah.
Actually, it's just because whenever you're a Republican, you get to do whatever you want. And that's it. End of story.
Please remember all of this. The next time you hear any of these cowards, these Republicans running for office, telling you that they are so-called constitutional conservatives who believe in states' rights and small government and freedom from federal government overreach. They believe, in fact, in none of those things, unless it's politically convenient for them, but they are not conservatives. And some of us, I should say very, very few of us, have been trying to tell you that for, about 20 years now. Get it? Of course, Trump's threats to use federal overreach to have a weaponized Justice Department jail his political enemies like Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker and Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, that cannot be entirely dismissed or laughed off as much as I think it actually deserves to be. But Trump has repeatedly threatened legal action and the weaponization of the DOJ against his political opponents, including former FBI Director James Comey, who last month he urged Attorney General Pam Bondi, she's a piece of work, in a social media post to not, quote, delay any longer in charging James Comey with something, anything. Please find something because, quote, justice must be served now. James Comey, of course, Donald Trump's original FBI director, who he ultimately fired. But James Comey is also the guy who arguably helped Donald Trump win the election back in 2016 when he came out and spoke about an investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, which amounted to nothing. In any event, after that social media post, Comey was, in fact, indicted just days later by a former beauty pageant contestant and then insurance lawyer that Trump hired as a criminal defense attorney because she was pretty. And then he named as a U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia after the real prosecutor there, also originally appointed by Donald Trump, by the way, the original attorney who headed up the office, refused to bring charges against Comey because, well, there was nothing to actually charge him with, nothing that would stick. So that guy, Eric Siebert, had to be pushed out by Trump and replaced by Lindsey Halligan, who has never prosecuted a case in her life, but she did it. She brought an indictment. She got a grand jury to agree to two ridiculous charges against Comey. They declined to indict on one of those charges, one of three that she had originally brought, just days before the statute of limitations would have run out on this particular case. So on Wednesday, James Comey made his first appearance in federal court since the indictment, and he pleaded not guilty to lying to Congress. The charge is almost too ridiculous to detail here. Maybe we'll have time in the future. But the claim is that he gave someone permission at the FBI to speak to media off record about an investigation at the time into Hillary Clinton, but later told Congress during sworn testimony that he did not give that permission. Defense attorney Patrick Fitzgerald entered the not guilty plea on Comey's behalf on Wednesday morning during a brief arraignment before U.S. District Judge Michael Nachmanoff. We'll figure that out. In Alexandria, Virginia. After his indictment, just over a week or so ago, Comey suggested that he wanted to have a speedy trial. And as well he should, given the absurdity of the charges and the fact that nobody else in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia, other than the beauty pageant lady who has never tried a case, none of the real attorneys were willing to sign on to this indictment. So I guess Halligan is going to be arguing by herself. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if this case ever gets to trial. The judge scheduled it to begin on January 5. So that's not long. Good luck to Halligan figuring out how to even try a case by then, because she's never done so, especially without attorneys who were seemingly, you know, willing to help her prosecute this dud of a case. But the defense attorney, Fitzgerald, there we go, thank you. Fitzgerald used to be a prosecutor. But anyway, so his defense attorney, Fitzgerald, said that Comey's defense team is planning to file a series of motions before the end of the year seeking to dismiss the case entirely on the grounds that it constitutes a vindictive prosecution, which it clearly is.
Yes.
That the grand jury process used to indict Comey had been abused, that the government had exhibited outrageous conduct, and that the interim U.S. attorney that Trump installed with the directions to charge Comey, Lindsey Halligan, was actually illegally appointed. And oh yeah, all of that is kind of true. Comey briefly addressed the judge, confirming that he understood his constitutional rights to remain silent and to be represented by counsel. Several of his family members were present in court, including his daughter, Maureen Comey. She's a former federal prosecutor in Manhattan. She was fired by Trump in July of this year, even though, or perhaps because, she was the lead attorney in the Jeffrey Epstein case and the Ghislaine Maxwell trial and the P. Diddy trial. She's like a serious attorney, a good one. So Trump fired her. Comey's son-in-law was also there, Troy Edwards. He's a former supervisor in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Virginia. He resigned after the indictment of Comey. Onlookers outside the courthouse on Wednesday reportedly began lining up before dawn. Some carried signs reading show trial, trumped up charges, and this is the weaponization of government. As noted, this case will fail. It will fail. It'll either be thrown out before ever reaching trial, or a jury will laugh it out of court. Now, you know that I am not in the business of making predictions. I just don't do that, or frankly, of speaking up in defense of Jim Comey. But this one is kind of pretty easy to see from a mile away, it seems to me.
Seems to me, too, but I'm not a lawyer.
Apparently, even Trump, however, is able to see it because he's already begun attacking the judge in this case, the judge who was randomly assigned to it, Judge Michael, again, Nachmanoff, we'll figure that out. He was nominated to the bench by President Joe Biden. He is a former federal defender in Virginia, and according to Associated Press, is known for methodical preparation and a cool temperament. So Trump derided him already today as a, quote, crooked Joe Biden appointed judge. The judge signaled in court on Wednesday that he intended to push the case forward and would not permit unnecessary delays. But never mind the legal hurdles that this case will have to overcome just to get to trial and the merits of the case, if it ever does. The case itself is a likely disaster, as ABC News highlighted again today with its report on why prosecutors in the Eastern District of Virginia originally declined this case in the first place. And by the way, so had two other Trump-initiated probes previously. They also looked at indicting James Comey and said, nope, there's nothing there. So ABC reports that federal prosecutors investigating Comey for allegedly making false statements to Congress determined that a central witness in their probe would prove, quote, problematic and likely prevent them from establishing their case to a jury. Comey was indicted last month on charges of making a false statement and obstruction related to 2020 testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. But according to sources familiar with the case, speaking to ABC News, Justice Department officials have privately expressed that the case could quickly unravel under the scrutiny of a federal judge and defense lawyers. Daniel Richman, a law professor who prosecutors allege Comey authorized to leak information to the press, told investigators that the former FBI director instructed him not to engage with the media on at least two occasions and unequivocally said that Comey never authorized him to provide information to a reporter anonymously, even though the whole case seems to be hanging on this. According to prosecutors who investigated the circumstances surrounding Comey's 2020 testimony before Congress, they had investigated this for 2 months using Richmond's testimony to prove that Comey knowingly provided false statements to Congress would result, they said, in, quote, likely insurmountable problems for the prosecution. So this is the prosecutors investigating this case that Donald Trump wanted investigated. They looked at it. They talked to the main witnesses and they decided, well, this is a likely insurmountable problem to overcome. The fact that the star witness disagrees with the entire case. Investigators detailed those conclusions in a lengthy memo last month, which is likely to come to light if this ever gets to trial, recommending that the office not move forward in charging Comey. That, according to sources who are familiar with that memo's contents. As ABC News previously reported, career prosecutors in the office not only determined that the vast amount of evidence they collected in their investigation would be insufficient to convince a jury to convict him at a trial, but would also fail to even meet a lower standard of reaching probable cause to even bring a case. As David Kurtz summarizes today, what does all this mean? Well, he says, one, it reinforces Halligan's prosecutorial misconduct in seeking an indictment against Comey in the first place, despite the fatal flaws with the case already identified and spelled out by prosecutors. Two, he writes, it shows how vulnerable the case will be to dismissal on various grounds before it ever gets to trial. And three, it confirms that the point of this whole exercise and of all of Trump's politically motivated prosecutions is to damage the target's reputation, to force them to spend time and money defending themselves, and in some instances, take them off the political playing field. A successful conviction, he notes, is just icing, but it's not the ultimate objective. One other point from the ABC News story notes Kurtz, Halligan is still likely to face a challenge to the validity of her own appointment as interim U.S. attorney. This is the same thing that happened to Trump interim USAs in New Jersey and in Nevada, both of whom were found to be unlawfully serving in that post and both of whom were thusly removed by the courts from cases, or the cases themselves were tossed out because of it. David Kurtz writes, whether it's Comey or another criminal defendant in the Eastern District of Virginia, someone is going to make that argument. And if they win it, it would likely nullify Comey's indictment entirely that Halligan personally presented to the grand jury because nobody else in the office was willing to help her by putting their name or reputation on this dog of a case. The indictment is signed only by Lindsey Halligan.
Because nobody else would sign it.
Right. And if she's removed from the case, there's no indictment. So
taxpayers then have just wasted millions of dollars on a nonsense prosecution.
And in fact, Comey's attorneys on Wednesday made clear that, yes, they will make that argument that she is unlawfully appointed to this post, along with their other pretrial motions to have the case dismissed before it even gets to trial. So there you go. That's the case against James Comey. And this is the crap we got to deal with because we've got a loser of a president who can't win at anything, it seems, and he's got to take it out against his enemies. And we all have to play along like this is normal. It is not normal. None of this is normal. This man should be removed from office, like the like Governor Pritzker said, with the 25th Amendment. But that requires, you know, the vice president and more than half of his cabinet to agree. So that's not likely going to happen, at least not this week. Ask me again next week. Let's take a quick break here. We will come back and try to get you caught up on some of the latest in the ongoing government shutdown, which, by the way, is also not going well for Donald Trump and the Republicans, at least it seems to me. But we will jump into that and our latest Green News report, which I had to kick down the road yesterday as we ran long with our guest. So a whole lot still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Thank you for sticking with us today. The federal government is now in its second week of partial shutdown, and there's a whole bunch of federal workers out there working for now for free for the fat man as Republicans continue to stand by their plan to cut subsidies for some 25 million Americans who purchase their health care insurance through the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, those exchanges. If you purchased your health care insurance through those exchanges, you will see your costs for premiums, monthly premiums, more than double after the end of the year. That includes millions of Americans who will see that, many of whom will not be able to stay insured and will then, well, lose access to health care. Democrats are remaining unified in their refusal to vote for a spending measure that would keep the government open as they fight for those ACA subsidies and for the restoration of, by the way, a trillion dollars in cuts to Medicaid in the Trump Republican budget bill earlier in the summer. And that bill will also cut $500 billion from Medicare unless Republicans fix that as well. Now, there was some question as to which party would take most of the blame for the government shutting down, with federal services being stopped or slowed, and with federal workers either furloughed temporarily or forced to work for now without pay. But so far, in poll after poll, the American people seem to be blaming Donald Trump and the Republicans for this shutdown.
Accurately.
Not Democrats. And they're even more strongly in favor of restoring the funding to the Affordable Care Act by like 70% to 30%. Here was Congressman Jim McGovern, a Democrat from Massachusetts, at the House Democrats' presser on Wednesday, as, yes, they seem to be sticking together.
Republicans love to advocate for more work requirements for poor people, people on SNAP, people on Medicaid. Well, I got an idea. Let's have a work requirement for Republicans to show up to Congress and do your goddamn job. I mean, millions of people are about to lose their health care. This is a serious crisis we're in, and we can avoid it. We can avoid people losing their health care, and we can keep the government open. They need to show up.
So, in fact, Republicans are not showing up. Mike Johnson sent them home a week or so ago, said don't bother coming back until the Senate passes a bill. And so they're not there. They're not working. They're not trying to figure out what to do about this problem. They just sent them home. And it's not as if they're going home to their home districts and holding town halls and explaining their position to their constituents, because they'd be booed off the stage. So all of this has now, as the shutdown is now in its second week, begun to cause problems for Republicans. Where Democrats are keeping a unified front, Republicans are starting to get a little bit shaky. And you will be shocked to learn that Donald Trump is not helping them. As Politico reported last night, 1 week into the government shutdown, top Republican leaders appear to have lost the plot. President Donald Trump, Speaker Mike Johnson, and Senate Majority Leader John Thune are straining to project a united front against Democrats, just barely concealing tensions over strategy that have snowballed behind the scenes since agencies closed last week. In one stark example, Trump scrambled the congressional leader's messaging on Monday when he told reporters in the Oval Office that he would, quote, like to see a deal made for great health care. And that he was, quote, talking to Democrats about it. Now, he's actually not talking to Democrats about it, other than when I guess he finally agreed to meet with Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries at the White House just before the October 1 shutdown, when he subsequently posted racist videos of them on his failing social media site right afterwards. But the fact that he's talking about making a healthcare deal does not go along with the Republican line that they will not discuss any negotiations on anything until Democrats agree to help them pass a spending bill to keep the government open that Democrats had zero input into. Within hours, Trump walked back those comments, saying, quote, I'm happy to work with the Democrats on their failed healthcare policies or anything else, but first, they must allow the government to reopen. What he wrote, or someone wrote for him on social media just hours after his initial comments. Oops. But tensions, reports Politico, surfaced again on Tuesday after a White House budget office memo raised questions about a federal law guaranteeing back pay for furloughed federal workers, one that Johnson and Thune, a law that they both voted for back in 2019. That law guarantees that federal workers forced to work during a shutdown will, in fact, be paid in full after the shutdown. The memo from the Office of the White House Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, was from Russ Vogt, the Project 2025 dude, who now runs OMB, and it apparently removes references to back pay from OMB guidance about the shutdown. But the back pay rule is not based on OMB guidance. It's based on federal law. And as TPM's Josh Marshall notes, even better than that, it's a federal law that was signed by guess who in 2019?
Donald Trump.
Correct. So the White House is busy threatening that federal workers will not get paid for the days during the shutdown. Do you think that's going to be popular with the American people? Is that going to get more support for Republicans during this shutdown? These episodes, Politico notes, are among many where the White House and Hill Republicans have been crosswise on strategy and seemingly not communicating in advance about their key moves. Republicans in disarray. The two Republican leaders in Congress, John Thune and Mike Johnson, for instance, both struggled to square their own support for federal workers with the administration's new position questioning back pay for furloughed employees. Johnson, when pressed, was forced to say that he supported back pay and praised the, quote, extraordinary Americans who serve the federal government. They serve valiantly and work hard, and they serve in these various agencies doing really important work, he said. I tell you, the president believes that as well. Sure he does, Mike. Because barely 2 hours later, Trump sent a very different message saying, quote, I would about whether they'll get their back pay. He said, I would say it depends on who we're talking about. For the most part, we're going to take care of our people. But for some people, they don't deserve to be taken care of. They don't deserve to be paid for work that they did. There is a name for that, if I recall. And by the way, which ones are our people, Mr. President? The federal government is supposed to be a nonpartisan entity, the federal workforce. Who exactly is Trump planning to target by not paying them because they're not our people? Quote, if you're Republicans, you have to get Dems to blink first, said a person close to the White House who was granted anonymity to describe strategic conversations. But Trump and Russ vote, have not followed that strategy, seemingly preoccupied with punishing their political enemies and executing an ideological agenda targeting the federal workforce and its programs. In contrast to the GOP divisions, Democrats, notes Politico, have been largely successful so far in their effort to focus attention on health care, in particular, the Affordable Care Act insurance subsidies that expire at the end of the year, and they have noticed the disarray on the other side of the aisle, said Senator Patty Murray, Democrat from Washington, on Tuesday, quote, "I think they are absolutely struggling to figure out how they are going to get out of this." But the split on the Republican side over all of this was underscored on Monday night when no one other than Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia and a Trump loyalist, took direct aim at her own party leaders for not addressing this looming health care insurance deadline. She wrote, quote, "Not a single Republican in leadership talked to us about this or has given us a plan to help Americans deal with their health insurance premiums doubling," Green wrote in all caps on social media. She went on to say, "When the tax credits expire this year, my own adult children's insurance premiums for 2026 are going to double, along with all the wonderful families and hardworking people in my district," but especially her children.
Yeah, when it affected her personally, then she paid attention.
She, in her long tweet, she wrote, quote, "I'm absolutely disgusted that health insurance premiums will double if the tax credits expire this year." Well, good for her. I did not see that coming, but she's absolutely right. They will double. And while Republicans are out there pretending that the reason Democrats won't vote along with them is because they want free health care for illegal aliens, as
which is
they
a lie.
Repeat over and over again, totally a lie. By the way, the people that come to this country from other countries, they had free health care in their other countries. They don't have it here, and they still don't have it now, and they won't have it no matter whether or not they extend the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act and remove the cuts from Medicaid, because none of that goes for non-citizens, at least those who are here unlawfully.
Of that is a lie, and it just underscores what Senator Whitehouse said the other day, which is Republicans have a fetish for cutting health care.
They do. They do, because they can afford it, and they don't give a damn if anybody else can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but things are not going well for Republicans when Marjorie Taylor Greene is turning against her own party and standing with Democrats. Not going well for Republicans in this shutdown, for now, anyway. We'll see how it goes. But what about those mass firings? Remember those that Trump was threatening if the Democrats did not vote to keep the government open last week? Where are those? They said they were coming. They were going to be huge and painful. Well, as Josh Marshall observes today at TPM, the shutdown started with the White House saying that it absolutely wouldn't budge and threatening a new, big new round of layoffs to punish Democrats into submission. More and more evidence now, however, shows that the firing threat was a bluff that the White House feels unable to follow through on. Even the elite media outlets, which for days were passing on the White House threats as news, are now belatedly saying that it's not happening. At least not yet. After failing to follow through on that threat, the White House and OMB, they moved on to a new threat. There would be no back pay. But that seems as empty a threat as the first one, notes Josh. In any negotiation or test of wills, the failure to follow through on a threat always signals weakness. And these are no different, he argues. For anyone who has eyes to see it, it's Democrats who have the stronger hand here. The Trump White House doesn't seem to have a clear card to play after they failed to compel Democrats to respond to their threats, and then we're unable to follow through on those threats. This is something so basic, even grade schoolers know this story from the schoolyard. If you're going to make a threat, you need to be ready to follow through, or else you're all talk and no one takes you seriously. which seems to be the way Democrats are now regarding this White House. Josh notes, once Democrats didn't give way to Trump's threats and showed the threats were hollow, what's the next card? Who knows? Maybe public opinion will turn against Democrats, but so far, the president looks weak. And the Republicans look confused and out of step with both the public and members of their own party. So anyway, it's, you know, still too early to know how this is all going to play out. But where someone recently asked me right after the shutdown began who was winning it, well, my answer was it's too early to determine winners or losers here at this point. And frankly, I think that it still is. But I can tell you who is not winning, at least at the moment, and that's Donald Trump and the Republicans for now. And frankly, it's nice to see Democrats hanging together for a change, especially on something as critical and basic as healthcare for millions of Americans. This really shouldn't be hard, and so far, for a change, it doesn't seem to be that hard for Democrats. See? All right, quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report, and a follow-up, a shutdown related follow-up to one of those stories in our report. That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. My thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help Desi Doyen and I stay on your public airwaves. You're the only one that keeps us here. Thank you. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. As I noted at the top of the show, we ran a little bit long yesterday with Lisa Graves, a great interview on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes.
And John Roberts. And if you haven't heard it, you should
definitely hear it.
Yeah. Listen to it. You can go over to bradblog.com, download it for free. But that meant that we had to kick the Green News Report from yesterday over till today's show. So I want to play that for you momentarily, but let you know that we've got a follow-up since we recorded the Green News Report yesterday to one of the stories we cover. So stay tuned for that as well as we get to our latest Green News Report.
The sky just lit up orange, and we're not used to that. So everyone ran down the street to be like, what's happening?
Massive oil refinery fire in Southern California set to spike gasoline prices. FEMA halts $300 million in emergency preparedness grants to states. Plus,
illegal, outrageous, unconstitutional.
Trump administration blocks billions in transit and clean energy funding to blue states.
All of that illegal unconstitutionality and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The EPA is actively eliminating its research arm. And research is how you find out what needs protecting in the environment. That's why the EPA now stands for, probably all right.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess the Trump administration cannot wait to do away with clean, renewable energy, so we'll have more and more oil refinery explosions, I guess.
Yes, unfortunately, like just happened in Southern California.
What?
Near Los Angeles, where it took more than 9 hours to extinguish a massive explosion and fire at a Chevron refinery complex late last week. No injuries were reported. Nearby residents were told to shelter in place, but officials said there was no danger to the public.
It's incredible that nobody was hurt. Apparently, about 1,000 people work at this plant every day. remarkable that no one was killed.
Very lucky. Chevron's El Segundo refinery is the company's second biggest refinery in the United States and has a history of safety and environmental violations, receiving environmental safety violation notices 13 times in just the last year.
Wow.
Its shutdown will likely cause gasoline prices to spike, at least regionally. The cause is still under investigation, but the Trump administration is not sending federal investigators to the refinery fire due to the ongoing federal shutdown, sidelining staff at the Chemical Safety Board and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
Wow.
Raising concerns about the potential for similar hazardous chemical releases in the future that will not get proper oversight.
I should say so.
In southern Louisiana, 5 weeks ago, an explosion at an oil and lubricant manufacturing plant rained down oily soot on predominantly minority neighborhoods near the industrial site, but the Trump Environmental Protection Agency did not deploy federal cleanup crews to the area until just a few days ago.
And by the way, there was no shutdown 5 weeks ago.
In other news, the Trump Federal Emergency Management Agency is withholding more than $300 million in emergency preparedness grants from states, funding that is used to sustain day-to-day operations at many state and local emergency management agencies.
That'll show them.
Because these grant amounts are calculated based on state population, Trump's FEMA has now added a new requirement. States must first prove that their population estimates do not include people who have been deported from the United States to ensure that states don't get more money than they deserve. It's part of the Trump administration's push to force states to bear the cost burden of disaster management, as called for in the right-wing manifesto Project 2025. Experts say withholding the money will further destabilize the ability of states to prepare for and respond to disasters.
Unbelievable. Let's gut FEMA.
Before the shutdown, Trump officials had already shut off funding to the U.S. Geological Survey's climate adaptation centers, canceling projects that help communities adapt to climate change locally, like hardening stormwater systems against more frequent intense storms and floods.
Well, we don't want anything that would actually help people.
And the Trump administration also froze more than $2 billion in transit funding for Chicago. White House Budget Director Russ Vogt said the money earmarked for elevated train lines had been put on hold to ensure it was not, quote, flowing via race-based contracting.
Oh, man.
The Trump White House is also using the ongoing government shutdown as cover to cancel nearly $8 billion in already appropriated clean energy grants for 16 states that did not vote for Donald Trump in the presidential election. The move cancels more than 220 projects focused on clean energy manufacturing, innovation, and infrastructure. The 16 states generate nearly half of the nation's GDP, and it is all wildly illegal, says independent U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont on MSNBC.
These projects have been appropriated.
Yes.
They were signed by a president. It is illegal to rescind them. And then basically to say to people in Vermont, in New York, in California, oh, you didn't vote for Donald Trump? Well, we're going to take away funding that was supposed to go to your state. Illegal, outrageous, unconstitutional.
I'll say so. For much more on all of those outrages and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So blue, so blue, so blue, so blue.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Yeah. A quick follow-up on that last story there regarding Trump cutting billions of dollars in grants to 16 states led by Democrats to try to punish them, I guess, for the shutdown. So after we recorded the Green News Report yesterday, MSNBC later in the day published a bit of a follow-up on that story, reporting that when the Trump administration announced that it was cutting more than 300 grants for energy projects across the country last week, it was clear whom the White House was trying to target: Democrats. But While most of the grants the Energy Department is canceling were set to benefit projects in Democratic congressional districts, an MSNBC analysis reveals that there are also a number of spending casualties in GOP districts, with at least 20 congressional Republicans representing seats affected by one or more of the scrapped grants. So, yeah, he's canceling grants. Oh, California, I hate them, even though there are more Donald Trump had more voters from California in 24 than any other state. But I hate California because they voted against me ultimately, so I'm going to cancel all of these grants.
Well, even though it hurts Republican districts.
Because there are Republican districts in yep. California. So some of these grants that were cut to states like California, but in GOP districts, amount to tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars. Lost injections of money that Democrats decried as vindictive, a way to punish the political opposition and breaking the law. Because, yes, that is money that was already appropriated by Congress and Republicans. MSNBC reports are now biting their tongues about the lost money that was supposed to be sent to their districts.
How courageous of them.
Of the roughly 20 Republicans that MSNBC contacted for reactions to losing the spending in their districts, just three responded by deadline and tried to pretend that it was no big deal. The Energy Department says it has terminated 321 grants supporting 223 projects totaling more than $7.5 billion. We will see if those cuts actually stand. I'm sure they'll be challenged in court, but these are tens of millions of dollars that if they are really allowed to cut these grants, many from bills passed under, yes, Joe Biden and Democrats that will now not flow to the districts of these Republicans after they had been, you know, scheduled and appropriated to bolster manufacturing, all sorts of things like improving power grid infrastructure, battery production plants, and much more. That means lost jobs. That means long overdue infrastructure improvements that will not happen. That means increased prices for things like electricity in those districts. Those Republican districts, all thanks to Donald Trump. Good job, Mr. President. So good luck to Republicans with that next year. Some of these Republicans, by the way, in these so-called blue states happen to be in very closely contested districts. None of this is going to help them, I suspect. But we shall see. We got to get out. My thanks again to our producer, Desi Doyen. My thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can always download them for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who hit a donate button when you stop by. It's very few of you who hit those donate buttons, so let's see if we can up that a little bit, shall we? We could really use your support. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate. You can drop me an email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. So blue, so blue, so blue, so blue.